How can private companies maintain a strong and consistent culture during periods of rapid organizational growth? In this episode of the Privately Speaking podcast series, host and private enterprise partner Erica Whitmore discusses the complexities of scaling up your high-growth company with Kyle Boat, Director, Advisory, KPMG Culture and Experience Practice.
All right. Well, I'm super excited about our podcast today. We always love talking about culture here at KPMG. And today we have an expert on the line who's going to help us think about it from, you know, a high growth company perspective, which I know we've talked about many times on this podcast, but I think Kyle's perspective is going to be really helpful. So without further ado, Kyle Boat, if you could introduce yourself. He's a director in our advisory practice, and I'm excited for this session today, Kyle.
Sure. Thanks, Erica. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, my name is Kyle Boat. I have more than 15 years of design, change management, and consulting experience. And a lot of the work that I've done in the past has been focused on bespoke product and experience design, innovation, and behavioral research. A lot of the work that I do, I like to apply human-centric design and change management perspectives to really help, you know, my clients, our clients at KPMG, ultimately really intentionally architect desired experiences for their organizations. And that goes from kind of the technology space also to the culture space. And, you know, a lot of folks talk about how culture kind of happens naturally, and it does, but there's also things that we can do to architect it. In terms of like the areas where I've worked, I've kind of worked across the gambit. You know, I've spent a lot of time in financial services organizations. I've also spent a lot of time in the federal space and state and local governments as well. And one of the things that really excites me just outside of work, and although it kind of applies to work, is really just the science behind creativity and innovation and how we can leverage those things as tools to create better experiences for people.
Well, that's awesome, Kyle. Well, I think just based on the chat we had kind of preparing for this, I'm really excited for kind of our listeners to have your view of the world, because I do think it's a little different than what we've heard before. And I think each company kind of takes everything that they hear, right, and kind of sets it up and decides what's best for their organization. So I think this will be really good. And so I think, you know, one of the first things we wanted to talk about, right, was how to maintain a strong and consistent culture across different teams, location, and especially near and dear to this group's heart is probably various stages of growth and hopefully many stages of, you know, highly accelerated growth. And so just want your view on that. You know, you always hear about really cool and great startup companies that are really early and they're scrappy and they have like an outstanding culture. They can get, you know, very talented individuals for, you know, not a lot in terms of compensation because the culture is just so awesome, right? So maybe tell me a little bit about your experience with that.
In terms of maintaining strong and consistent cultures, regardless of the size of the organization, from my perspective and from a lot of the work that I've done at KPMG, it really starts with this idea of identity. Within your organization, are you able to articulate what your culture is? I've had many clients where we've done culture work, and sometimes we'll go to some of the most senior leaders within a very large organization, C-suite folks, right? And you'll get a different answer of what culture means from the CEO to the CFO to the CTO, and then definitely something different down when you look at folks that are in maybe middle management, and even something different when you have folks that are closer to the line work. And being able to consistently articulate that in the same way at kind of in all channels of your communication, of your interaction, how you interface with people is just really, really crucial. You know, one of the ways that you can do that is really starting with values. A lot of the work that I've done, particularly, and I'll tell you a story about a large nonprofit that we did work for, they were thinking about re-architecting their culture, and they had an identity. They had a clear group of people that they were serving, and this was serving at-risk youth in the LGBTQ+ community. So they had a really strong identity about who they were and who they were serving from a client perspective. but they weren't able to articulate like what their values were. And they had these long value statements. And so one of the first things that we did with their executive team was to say, you know, what do you value? What does this organization value? And what does that look like? You know, that sounds a little heavy-handed from an executive perspective. And it was, because I think that strong leadership and a clear leadership vision is really important for a successful, consistent culture. But not only were we able to design that with the senior leaders of that organization, but we also took that on the road and really got that feedback from the organization's people, right? Does that align? Does this resonate with you? And so making sure that kind of you have this viewpoint of culture and how you create it from not only the top down, which really is kind of like your guardrails in terms of how you would want your culture to be, but also from the bottom up, right? Which gives people the flexibility and free flow and input to have some of that ownership and really make it their own.
Well, and it's something that once you have all agreed, right, collectively, then that's your center, right? Like you always go back to that. Like it doesn't mean that there aren't days or weeks that you may stray from that, right? But it's always something that the whole organization then can come back to. So one thing we talked about a little bit earlier was the frequency of, and maybe I'm jumping ahead, Kyle, and if I am, stop me. You know,
this is your show, Erica, your show.
Well, I'm excited about this, so I want to get to it. So to your point, you worked with them, you got it set up, but then you have to come back and evaluate whether or not you're consistently living it, right, as an organization, right? So tell me a little bit about that and the frequency, and because again, I'm excited about this part. I think our audience will really, really appreciate the perspective.
It's really easy to say that culture can be your competitive advantage. It's like words on a page that I think a lot of people say, a lot of organizations say. And I think inherently, we all know what we think that means, right? It's like we have a culture that's in alignment with our business strategy, within alignment with our growth strategy. Our people are on board with that. And ultimately, it unlocks like their best capabilities, right? And so when people feel and align with the purpose of their work, that definitely unlocks higher performance. There's data out there that suggests that. And also people feel better at work. And when they're feeling better at work, they're doing better at work. However, that sounds great, but it also can sound a little squishy too. And one of the things that I'm really interested in the culture work that I've been doing over the last several years is, how do we take something that's so squishy like that and make it more tangible, right? And I think measurement of that is one of the most important things that organizations really fall short on. You know, many organizations that I've seen, you know, they really rely heavily on that once a year all employee survey. And, you know, the challenge there with that, not to knock it, I mean, it's been around, it provides a good source of data for a lot of different HR departments across the country, but like, it's a point in time snapshot. And it's also a snapshot that is guided by this one-way take of a single individual's view on what's happening more broadly in an organization or what's happening more broadly with a management team. And you really miss where the rubber meets the road, right? From a culture perspective, which is those day-to-day interactions and the experiences that people have. And so one of the things that we've been challenging our clients to do is to drive towards a more continuous cultural measurement approach. And so we've been exploring things like leveraging organizational network analysis, ONA, for those who are familiar with it, and AI for better understanding what do those culture interactions look like within the interaction between employees. And so I'll give you an example. In order to get to this level, by the way, we kind of skipped a step, which is you can have values and you can have a vision for what your culture is, but to really make that tangible, you have to define what does that look like from a behavioral standpoint? What are people actually doing and what does that look like and how am I showing up, right? And if you can get to that level, then you can say, okay, well, we can ask people what that looks like when they interact with others. And so there's a number of software groups that are out there that are doing things like, you know, asking people bite-size survey questions about interactions that they have with their colleagues immediately after they have them. And then what that does is that creates just this giant corpus of data that, one, provides great feedback for the people that are having those questions asked about them. But two, it's great insight for kind of a larger enterprise organization to say, where are folks struggling within our departments, right? From a behavioral standpoint, like let's say you and I, Erica, had a meeting and then you got a survey about me that asked the question or provided a Likert scale statement that says, Kyle was transparent in our interaction towards our business outcomes or something like really specific like that, right? Organizations can start to pinpoint like where that's happening well and where it needs improvement. And doing that on a interaction to interaction level is just way more informative and continuous than something, you know, like a once a year type survey. And I mean, again, I think both of those things have a time and a place, right? It's getting to a place where you can use that once a year survey to inform certain things and then using kind of these AI driven technologies that enable you to get more of a behavioral view and using that as well. And that's also doesn't also include kind of the in the middle, which is, you know, maybe there's specific OKRs or KPIs that organizations are looking at as they're trying to influence what their culture measurement is. But culture's a thing where it's back to your original question. It's not a thing where you can just like do something and then say you've got it, it's good.
You can't set it and forget it, right? Like you have to live it every single day.
You have to live it every single day, and you have to know it every single day, understand it every single day. It's just like, in my view, it's just like any other organizational OKR metric or KPI that you would look at, right, and define and keep track of at your senior most level positions.
In terms of that continuous feedback, if it's asked right when it happened, then you remember, right, versus once or twice a year when you have to remember all the interactions that you've had and what do you want to focus on, right? This is like gets to the heart of it. And for the individual who's receiving the feedback, then they can act on that immediately, right? They're getting real-time feedback, which is much more productive, right, than like once or twice a year.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we all remember kind of like the 360 surveys too, that we do kind of once a year, right? And some organizations, they let folks pick the folks. Sometimes your manager defines who the folks are, but at any rate, it's a finite set. And again, it's a point in time snapshot and it's based off of people's memory and there's no kind of continuous pull through that helps actually change the behavior that you're looking to change or influence, right? Based on those culture guardrails that you've established.
Yeah, absolutely. So the next thing that we want to talk about is scaling, right? And changing roles and expectations, changing in complexity of the organization, whether that's due to, you know, an acquisition or a potential acquisition. You know, how does an organization, right, scale and yet, you know, preserve that kind of agility and creativity?
I've seen lots of organizations where, you know, they do an acquisition and they bring in a bunch of really talented folks who maybe have developed a product or developed a service or do something really well. And there's a cultural mismatch. One or the other side is kind of being consumed, right? There's no kind of meeting of the minds of what does the new culture look like? So that would be my first point is that, you know, anytime that you're combining groups of people, there has to be a give and take when it comes to what culture is, because that old organization doesn't exist anymore. It's a new organization that has a new set of folks that have been injected into it. You know, you have to account for that. So I think being able to give folks a seat at the table in terms of starting to architect what that new future looks like is really important. And I mean, I've seen organizations go the wrong way, right? Where it's like, you know, we're acquiring you. You are assimilating into our culture. This is the way we do business. There's a reason why we're acquiring you, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And those types of attitudes are just it's not conducive to unlocking what you're actually getting from those.
The true value, right, of what you are technically acquiring. Because part of what they're doing, no matter what it is their culture, right? I mean, you can't separate that.
Yeah, I think that's true. And then you just have attrition and that investment is kind of like tanked, really.
Right. And like maybe you even still have like the product, right? But you no longer have the true, like you said, the full value, right, of what you're taking on.
So kind of going back to this idea of scaling, I think another important piece to this, I'll keep coming back to it, is leaders, right? Leaders of organizations have such an important role in making sure that they're setting the tone, helping to foster the culture that they believe aligns with the strategy that's gonna get them to business success. What I've found in clients and in various organizations is that you have some leaders that have the ability to do that, to enable cultures within their organization and to bring others along. And you have some organization or some leaders that don't have that ability. That's okay. But being honest about kind of the capabilities within your own leadership team are really, really important. And that was a sensitive subject with one of our clients. We had conversations around, is so-and-so really equipped to lead this kind of culture transformation? Do they have the trust from individuals within their group? Do they have skills to be able to support people in candid conversations, right? Are they the type of leader that you need? I think, you know, scaling heavily relies on leaders and doing the best that you can to equip those leaders with the skills that they need to drive that. That culture is really important. And sometimes that means executive leadership enablement sessions, or sometimes that means retreats. I think there's a lot of things that you can do from a leadership development perspective to help get people equipped to do that practice, right? We were supporting one client through not only a culture transformation, but also they ran into a financial challenge and they were forced to do a reduction in force. And many of the leaders had never been in that situation before. Like, how do you have a conversation about a reduction in force? And that's a very human conversation that you would need to have. I mean, we've all seen the headlines for organizations that have done that really poorly, just like over a Zoom call or over a mass call, and they don't do it very well. How do you do that in a way that's empathetic with the individuals that are in that situation? How do you do that in a way that's in alignment with not only, you know, your brand, but your values, and with transparency and how that shines through? And so what we wound up doing was, I mean, we did an entire kind of communication campaign with just the leaders, and we did some leadership enablement work, and we had practice sessions, and we talked about values, and we talked about, you know, transparency and discussions around business and why decisions had to be made so that folks could understand what that meant. And I mean, those are hard conversations. Making sure that leaders are equipped to be able to act within a way that demonstrates and role models the culture that you expect to have within the organization is crucial.
Well, our last topic is innovation. So we talked about this a little bit. Innovation and execution, risk and reward, the challenges associated with that. And you know, I think you were going to talk a little bit about, you know, the behaviors associated with that. Maybe we can start there.
There's a lot of work that's out there. And I'm, you know, I mentioned in my intro that I love the science of creativity and all that stuff. I consider myself kind of a continuous student. I mean, I really feel like the growth mindset is really important to do this type of work among many.
100%. Yeah. It's a constantly evolving, I imagine.
Yeah. So the work is constantly evolving. What good looks like is constantly evolving. And you're right. I mean, this idea of balancing innovation and execution is something that a lot of organizations struggle with, because when you look at a lot of big organizations, they might be really big today because they were really innovative in the past, and then they got really good at execution, but then forgot about innovation. There's lots of organizations that are like that out there. And I've had several clients that are focused on the idea of, you know, well, how can we be innovative in a world where what we do requires utmost precision? What we do either has a life and death implication, or if we make a mistake in this particular situation, then we've lost billions of dollars. Like, how do we balance that? And I think it does come down to your point about behaviors and some of the common behaviors that I've seen from cultures of innovation really are along the lines of, you know, making sure that you're moving away from a culture that has a fear of failure and moving into a place where you create environments where there can be intelligent failure. You know, when you think about psychological safety and creating environments for people to try new things and to make mistakes, to learn, to carry on, I mean, that's really the crux behind all of that. And you have to make the space and place for it within the organization to be able to do that effectively. And sometimes we all get caught up in like, well, we just have to deliver. Well, we just have to deliver. We have to do the thing that we need to do. And we need to hit our business metrics, or we need to do whatever it is we need to do, right? It's oftentimes looked upon as like, well, are we really spending our time in the best way by experimenting with different things? And I think you need that. And I think employees who are more kind of geared towards the innovative process and the mindset, I think really, really need that. And I'll come back to that idea of employees who are geared towards it in a second. But also I think like, you know, really moving away from developing words on a page. And we kind of talked a little bit about this early on, but there's so many organizations that we say we're innovative. You know, we want to be innovative. And wow, if we could only just be like this organization over here, then we would be more innovative. And I think folks kind of where they get stuck is when they recognize that you can say all that stuff, but you have to take tangible action and follow through. You have to invest in it, right? You have to spin up a team, or you have to devote time to it in the normal course of business that you already have. And so the behavior of just talking about it and not doing anything about it is that's a real big deterrent to innovation. You know, lastly, this idea of assuming direction and goals and making these big assumptions as opposed to being data-driven and approaching the problem from a data-driven perspective. Innovation isn't a thing where you can just come up with something and say, yep, this is a great idea, let's move forward. I mean, the best innovations come from individuals that have a really deep understanding in a specific area, right? And but then are also allowed the flexibility to put new ideas together that are still in alignment with that deep understanding, but maybe inch it forward in a different way that hadn't been thought about before. And I think that goes back to having a culture that really plans for innovation. Are you allowing folks that have the innovation skill set to actually act on it, right? Because, I mean, all organizations, you know, you need folks that are really great at driving execution. And that doesn't mean that you can't be innovative in execution, but having those, that diversity of mindset and making sure that that's pulled through with all of the individuals in your organization is really key to enabling innovation as a whole. I think it just comes down to bottom line is that a lot of organizations don't make space for it. Space and time and resources.
Yep, absolutely. Because they're so focused on the execution. And in terms of, if you think of like more of the high growth companies, so not, you know, necessarily the mature and large company, I mean, how much time, I mean, I have my own view, but I'd love your thoughts. Like, how much time do you think those organizations spend on innovation, like as a percentage?
Man, you're putting me on the spot there.
I am putting you on the spot, Kyle.
If they've already established what their market differentiation is, and it's just a matter of getting to a place where you can start to build business results, I would say that there's a little bit less emphasis on innovation at that point, because you got to keep the lights on and you've got to be in a place where you can see business results and create a sustainable business so that you can be allowed to innovate in the future, so that you have the time and space to do it. So I think, like, you know, early on, if you don't have your market differentiation, then I mean, I think you should be in a space where, you know, you really need to be in that innovative mindset to be able to say, okay, what's really making us different? And so I don't know if I can put a percentage on that, 60, 70%.
I was going to say it's over 50% at that point, because you're still trying to figure out how you can make an impact and how you can get that stable product or service.
But as you mature, right, you spend more time on the execution. And again, that doesn't mean that you can't innovate within execution. You can.
You have to keep innovating, hopefully. Otherwise, at some point, someone else will do it for you.
That's right. And you have to have that built into the fabric of how you're doing work so that you can continue to have that innovation mindset. Because if you don't, then it kind of just gets locked away and people forget about it and they get comfortable. And
that's where it needs to, I'm leading the witness here, but I think this is where you're going. That's where then it needs to become part of your culture, and hopefully it already is.
That's right. It has to be fostered. It has to be something that you value. You have to articulate behaviors of what innovation looks like for you as an organization, right? It probably doesn't mean like sitting around and coming up with ideas that are wild and crazy, right, for a really long time, because I mean we live in a capitalist environment, and we have to be able to generate business outcomes from what we're trying to do. And so it might look a little different than that. That's not to say that that type of activity is not useful, because it is in certain contexts, but being able to harness that value, take action on it, and make it real, right, is really the combination of, you know, those great ideas and the action that it takes to make that innovation come to life.
Absolutely. Well, we are at time, Kyle, but I do want you to leave our audience with top 2 to 3 things in terms of kind of summarizing everything that we've talked about. What are the 2 to 3 things they kind of need to focus on?
Your culture and your organization should not be left to chance. Be intentional about it, right? And that's a responsibility that leaders have. It's a business driver. It's an employee driver. Like, it's so important. And it really just influences the experience that everybody has within an organization. So that'd be one. Two, I would say, don't leave culture in a nebulous space that you can't articulate it and that you can't measure it. Because focusing in on the measurement is how you build a baseline. It's how you know if you're getting better or not, or worse, right? And it's something that gives you that visibility into what's happening within your organization. And then I think the last one that I would leave folks with here is that it's really aspirational. Like, everybody wants to be innovative, and innovation means really specific things. And it means that you need a really specific environment for that to happen. And again, back to that intentionality of your culture, if you're not allowing that to happen within your culture, within your behaviors, within the environment that you're creating, then you're never going to get to a place that innovation can flourish. And really, it's about that intentionality.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, Kyle, thank you so much for your time today. I think our listeners are really going to enjoy this session. So appreciate you sharing all of this, and look forward to meeting up with you in person at some point.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Erica. It was great to be here. Thanks for inviting me. And it was a fantastic conversation. Thanks again.
Awesome. Thanks, Kyle.
Thank you for listening to KPMG's Privately Speaking podcast. And be sure to subscribe to this series to be notified of new episodes.